Thank you for joining the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. To what extent should Christians engage in politics? Do Christians have a responsibility to vote? What if there are two bad choices at the top of the ticket? And joining me to discuss further is pastor and author Bob Russell. Bob is the former pastor of Southeast Christian Church in Louisville. He's an author of a number of books, and he has a mentorship ministry for younger pastors. Bob, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Well, thank you, Richard. I'm glad to be here. I wish you had an easier subject, but it's a really, really needed one, so I look forward to talking about it.
Thank you. It's a challenging subject, and yet it's one that we can't avoid as Christians who are citizens of the United States and citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We have these things called elections, and we have an opportunity to vote for candidates. And really, I'd go further to further those values and principles that we believe benefit everybody. And we're going to press into that a little bit further here in a moment. But I want to go to a recent survey done by a respected pollster, George Barna. He found recently that as many as 104 million people of faith are unlikely to vote in this upcoming election. Out of that 104 million, Bob, 32 million of those are self-identified Christians who regularly attend church.
Wow. Wow.
I'm wondering, what should we make of this? And then the follow-up question is, do we have a responsibility to engage in elections?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who call themselves Christians who opt not to vote because they feel like they're voting for one of two imperfect candidates. Yeah. And they say, I'm endorsing this person's behavior and lifestyle. Yeah. No, you've got two choices. And it's wise to vote for the one you think will do the best to stem the tide of evil and to promote good. And, you know, Samson was used by God in the Old Testament, very imperfect person, but God still used him. And we have a responsibility to vote. I hear preachers say sometimes, well, the Apostle Paul never spoke against Nero. Well, that was a whole different form of government. It was much more autocratic than the one we live in. In America, we are the government. This is the government of the people, and that means we have a stewardship responsibility to take what God has entrusted to us and advance it as best we can.
Bob, here's a few of the reasons why Christians, self-identified Christians, they're giving as far as why they're not voting. The most common reason, two-thirds of those surveyed, said that there was a lack of interest in politics and elections. They just weren't interested. They're not political, is what they would say. 57%, over half, disliked all of the major candidates, and they felt like those candidates did not reflect their values or their views on the issues. And half of those out of the 104 million said that they're going to avoid voting because the election has become too controversial for their liking. 50% said it was too controversial, too divisive.
Yeah. When I hear people say they're going to avoid something because it's controversial, well, Jesus was so controversial, he got crucified. And we can't avoid controversy. In fact, Jesus said, if the world hates me, it's going to hate you. You know, Richard, some time ago, I went to rent a car at the airport. I had my wife with me, but a number of flights have been canceled. And by the time I got to the rent-a-car place, only two vehicles left. One was a pickup truck, and the other was, I don't know, a Cooper or some really small car. And I had to choose between those two vehicles. Now, I couldn't get my golf clubs in the small one, so I rented a pickup truck, and I drove to pick up my wife, and she couldn't believe I came to pick her up in a pickup truck. But the other option was we could hitchhike. You know, I had to make a choice between one of two. And this is the way it is with candidates. There are 350-some million people in America. We're down to two, and we have a responsibility to make a choice that is going to be the wisest for the next 4 years.
Bob, I've heard Christians say over the years that engaging in politics is corrupting. We don't want to sully ourselves. We don't want to compromise our witness. And here's a passage I hear them refer to. Well, our citizenship is not of the earth, but it is of heaven. And this is from a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to one of the early churches. And I find that interesting because he said it. And yet at the same time, didn't Paul appeal to his earthly citizenship? He was a Roman citizen. He was unjustly detained. And he said, hey, you're violating the law. I'm a Roman citizen. So I'd like you to speak to that. You know, it is biblical that we're heavenly citizens. That's where our ultimate allegiance is. We're all also earthly citizens. How do we balance the two?
In Philippians 3:20, there where Paul says, we eagerly await a Savior from there because our citizenship is in heaven. That's our ultimate goal. But right now we're living on this earth where we're supposed to be salt and light to the surroundings. Elijah in the Old Testament and many of the prophets confronted political power. In fact, Ahab called Elijah his enemy. And then John the Baptist in the New Testament confronted King Herod for his immoral lifestyle. And Jesus didn't say, boy, John, you're delving into politics. Stay out of that. He said, no greater man born to woman than John the Baptist. And the history of the church over and over again shows how Christian leaders got involved in imparting to their people the basic principles. You go back, I've got a couple of books about sermons preached prior to the Revolutionary War. And preachers were talking about when is there the right time to revolt? When is there the right time for go to war? And so while we're on this earth, we're to be the salt and light and make a difference.
I see a divide. I want to speak to the pastors for a moment. And I see a divide between the older pastors, and I'll just say 50 and older, and the younger pastors. It seems to me that the older pastors are more willing to speak to the issues and speak of the Christian responsibility to vote and engage in elections. Younger pastors are more fearful and very much more reluctant to speak to the issues and to have their congregations to vote and encourage them to vote. Are you seeing a similar thing?
Oh, very much so. But I think basically there are two reasons for that. Mm-hmm. My generation, the older generation, we were trained in the spiritual heritage of America. That what other nation has "In God We Trust" on its coins, yeah, or "Under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, or "We are endowed by our Creator" in the Declaration of Independence, or "To God be the glory" on the Washington Monument. So we were taught that America is an exceptional nation because the Bible says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And we were established acknowledging that there is a God who is over us, and there is a Bible that is a common consensus of right and wrong. But the younger generation were not taught that. I think sometimes their professors, to shock them, talked about the evils of America. America was established in greed, or we were built on the backs of slaves, or we've rebelled against some of the basic principles of Scripture. So they don't have that appreciation of America's heritage that we have. But maybe a bigger reason that preachers, younger preachers, are reluctant to speak out is because we're so drilled in being seeker-driven. We see everything through the lens of how is the unbeliever going to view what we have to say today. And they're told by influential preachers, whatever you do, don't talk about politics, don't talk about controversial issues, because that will be a turnoff, especially to the millennial or to Gen Z. And so looking through the eyes of the seeker, they back off. And having backed off for a period of time, if they do raise the issue now, they'll get a lot of backlash.
But Bob, doesn't the Bible speak to all of life? I understand you want to reach the person. You want to reduce barriers that would help you to find and engage that person and to bring them into church. But Scripture speaks of all of life, doesn't it? Including government, including social issues, morality, how should we live? So what would you say to that pastor who is seeker sensitive, and yet he's charged with teaching the full counsel of God?
Yeah, well, our first obligation is not to accommodate the seeker. Okay. We need to be sensitive to that and speak the truth as lovingly as we can speak it. But we're to first preach the word, and we're to preach the word in season and out of season. So the first question is not, how's the seeker going to receive this? The first question is, what does the Lord say? And how can I present it in the best way possible? I do mentoring groups for preachers. And I overheard one evening a group of younger preachers ask each other, are you going to say anything about the upcoming election? And I just listened, and somebody said, I'm not going to deal with it because it is such a controversial issue. It just divides people, and it's such a turnoff. I'm not going to say anything at all. And the rest of them kind of agreed. And one of them said, what do you think, Bob? Well, they asked the wrong person.
The door was wide open for you, wasn't it?
So they asked me. And I said, let me ask you a question. If one of the two candidates running for president said that they, if elected, they were going to kill all male babies 2 years of age and younger, the way Herod did in the Old Testament, do you think you'd speak out then? And they all agreed they'd have to speak out then. Then I asked, what do you think abortion is? Mm-hmm. What's your stance on life? What's your stance on family? And it opened their hearts a little bit. We had a long discussion about when we should speak up and when we should not. Mm-hmm. But the preacher doesn't just speak to the seeker. The preacher is a shepherd.
Yes.
And we're to lead the flock. And we've got some young sheep out there who need guidance, and they need to understand what the principles are in the election, and they need some guidance. The shepherd leads the sheep, and they need guidance for where to go.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. If you're just joining us, you are tuned in to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, here with former pastor of Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Bob Russell. And we are talking about Christians and the election. And Bob, I need to put you on the spot for a minute. Just just a moment ago, you said there's different levels of courage as to what pastors can do. And the last level was telling the congregation how they would vote. Now, Southeast Christian is one of the largest churches in the country. It was when you had left several years ago. Did you do that to your congregation? Did you talk about the election? I know you've encouraged your people to vote. I know you've discipled them to think biblically about the issues. But if you don't want to answer that, that's okay. But how? To what level of courage did you have?
I was somewhere between level 3 and level 4.
Okay.
I remember one election, I listed the issues, spiritual issues, biblical issues I thought were impactful. And I didn't say, I'm going to go out and vote for George Bush. Yeah. But I got a letter that week from a family said, we're no longer going to be attending Southeast mm-hmm. Christian. We didn't know when we came we were going to attend a Republican rally. And so I wrote them back and I said, I regret that you're leaving, but I didn't mention a Republican or Democrat in my entire sermon. Here's the manuscript. Would you please tell me where biblically you disagree with me? And they wrote back, well, we don't intend to get into an ongoing argument. We're just going to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes, you know, Jesus let the rich young ruler walk away because he didn't have a right understanding of what it meant to follow Christ. Now, hopefully he turned around and came back years later. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we're better off establishing our turf and saying, this is what our church believes about life. This is what our church believes about the family. This is what our church believes about gender dysphoria. Are you going to lose some people? You may, but it's going to be a whole lot better than delaying it, and then all of a sudden you have to take a stand, and all of you got a good portion of your church that's shocked. But one of the tests of our character as a preacher is how do we deal with criticism? Can we take it if we're standing for truth? Nobody likes that. But that's part of being a shepherd.
Bob, let's talk about some of the issues. There are many moral and social issues that are right in front of us today. You just mentioned a few of them. The sanctity of human life, gender dysphoria, that marriage is a big issue. All of these are Genesis 1 issues, aren't they? Genesis 1, 26 through 28, we read in the Word that God makes mankind in His image. He makes them male and female. So we're gendered human beings, two categories, male and female. He brings them together to become one flesh. This, the idea of marriage is God's idea. And then this idea of the value of human life. It comes from, again, Genesis 1, that it's because we're made in the image of God. These are Genesis 1 issues. Have we forgotten along the way somewhere that these are creational ordinances that God has, He's told us, here's how it is. Have we forgotten in our churches that God has spoken, therefore we should speak, and we should understand these issues, and as they relate to politics as well?
You know, there's an old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Mm-hmm. That's not altogether true. Familiarity breeds indifference. And we've heard so much about abortion and the right to life, that even the church become indifferent to it. And but for me, that's the number one issue. That's always a priority for me. In the Old Testament, when God listed the sins of the Israelites and why He was allowing them to be taken captive by the Babylonians, over and over again He would say, they even allowed their children to be sacrificed in the fire. They got to the place where the sacrificing of children was part of their culture. And I think that's where we are. Unfortunately, we don't have a strong pro-life candidate running for president. Donald Trump has said that he's against abortion after the 15th week. Well, unfortunately, 95% of the abortions occur after the 15th week.
That's right.
But the other candidate, Kamala Harris, said is for abortion right up to the day before birth.
That's right.
And so we've got a choice between candidates of preventing some abortions or not preventing abortion at all. Or you come to the other issues you didn't mention, Israel. God told Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. And we need to look, where do these two candidates stand in relationship to our ally in the Middle East? That's a biblical issue. You mentioned family, parental rights. Mm-hmm. One candidate for vice president passed the law, signed a bill in Minnesota that children 12 years of age can have radical gender surgery without permission of parents. Now, we got to take that into consideration when God says the children are a blessing from God and the children are to obey their parents. The parents have authority over those children. What about immigration and borders? Acts 17 says God established boundaries. Now, the Bible also says we're to practice hospitality. In our home, my wife practices hospitality. I mean, our home's a restaurant. Our home's a hotel. I can bring somebody in overnight, but I better not bring 50.
Yeah. You'll be in trouble with Judy, won't you?
Yeah, I'd be in big trouble. And so we have to say, okay, what is the right attitude toward the alien? And what happens when we lower the, open our borders? Who comes in? Does that make our children safe? Because as leaders, we have a responsibility to protect the flock.
Yeah.
So there are a number, how to care for the poor. But one candidate is for socialism. Yeah. And socialism negates work. It rewards laziness. It's been a failure everywhere it's been tried. The other candidate is more for a capitalistic approach. But all of those are biblical issues. Yeah. So how can we keep silent when politics is encroaching on our territory and we just keep backing up and giving in?
How would we prioritize? I think what I heard you say is that the sanctity of human life is a top issue for you. That's the number one issue, even though we have two imperfect candidates that are not pro-life. Where would you go after that?
Well, you mentioned going right back to Genesis.
Yeah.
The first institution that God established was the family. So we got to consider male and female And who's going to honor marriage? Who's going to honor parental rights? Who's going to protect the freedom of God's people? That's another issue. You know, which of these candidates is more likely to protect the right of a baker who, in his conscience, can't bake a cake for a gay wedding, or for a doctor in his conscience can't perform an abortion? Is he going to lose his job if he refuses to do that? Or all kinds of how about the preacher who speaks up about what is right and wrong in marriage? Who's a couple or a man or a woman, they don't want a vaccination because it violates their conscience. Say, okay, which of these two candidates is in favor of coming in with a heavy government arm and insisting these things are going to occur, and you could lose your job, you could lose your church, you could lose your freedom.
So conscience rights is on the ballot, religious freedom is on the ballot, borders are on the ballot, sanctity of life, the integrity of children, biological integrity of gender dysphoric children. These are issues that are on the ballot, and even though we have two imperfect candidates at the top, these candidates will be appointing people to serve in government. The president, by the way, has some 4,000 political appointees, including federal judges. There are hundreds of federal judgeships that are over a four-year term that will open, and the president appoints them. There are special agents. Then there are executive agencies. You have cabinet officials. And within each of the cabinets, there are many political appointees. So in a sense, the president, whoever we elect, is going to appoint some 4,000 people that will reflect the platform of the political parties. And there's a difference in those platforms, isn't there, Bob?
Very much so. You know, in Isaiah, the first chapter, Isaiah said there come a time when judges would be put in place who would judge justly and righteousness would prevail in the land. So when we're choosing a candidate, we say, which of these candidates has a history of respecting justice? And which of these candidates is going to appoint federal judges and others in positions of authority who are going to extend righteousness throughout the land? There are a lot of biblical issues that come to play, and it really is an abdication of our responsibility to be good stewards. Is to say, well, I'm not going to vote because no candidate's perfect.
I think we've got to ask as Christians, and we're going to wind this down here in just a moment. We've got to ask, what do we believe? What are we? What's worth fighting for? And where is that line? I'll put it this way: where is that clear line that when the government encroaches or when policies encroach, do we say, "Hey, enough and no more"? Bob, does it take a government order to say to pastors, "You cannot speak about this issue or that issue from the pulpit"? We've seen it in other countries.
Yeah,
Canada's a good example. But does it take that some extreme measure from the government to impose?
I like that phrase in the Old Testament. The men of Issachar understood the times and knew what to do. And preachers, these are not ordinary times.
No.
This is not a common election. We are in danger of losing the freedoms that we've had and going toward socialism and communism, and they will not return. Understand the times, and it is time to take a stand and speak up and do what I think the Lord would have us to do, to be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God will go with you.
Bob, that is a good last word. I want to encourage all of the viewers and listeners to be in prayer. Pray that God would raise up leaders who would best honor him, two very imperfect leaders at the very top of the ballot, and pray as to how God would help you to think through the issues biblically. And then I want to encourage you to get out and vote. Get out and vote. Biblical values. Encourage your friends, your family, co-workers to get out and vote too. This is an important election. There is so much at stake. And be reminded, though, too, that God is sovereign over leaders. He brings leaders up. He removes leaders. But you have a role to play too. Get out, pray, get out and vote. And vote biblical values. Bob, do you have a final word? I mean, what you just said was good, but do you have any last words of instruction or encouragement?
I don't know if I got time for this, but I was just reading a section of Ron White's book on A. Lincoln, a biography. And there's a story in there that Lincoln wanted Henry Clay to be president. He was running against what the author calls a kind of a milquetoast James Polk. But many of the abolitionists, people who were against slavery, couldn't vote for Henry Clay because he owned slaves. But if Polk got elected, he vowed that he would annex Texas, and that would automatically make Texas a slave state. And Lincoln advocated voting for Henry Clay, who was a much better candidate, even though he owned slaves, so that slavery wouldn't be advanced into Texas. And he encountered a guy who said he just couldn't vote for somebody who was a slaveholder. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, "We are not to do evil, that good may come." Lincoln, irritated, said, "This general proposition is doubtless correct, but does it apply? If your vote, by your vote, you have prevented the extension of slavery, would it not have been good and not evil to have used your votes, even though it involved the casting of them for a slaveholder?" And then he said, by the fruit, the tree is to be known. An evil tree cannot bring forth good fruit. If the fruit of electing Mr. Clay would have been to prevent the extension of slavery, could the act of electing him be evil? And that was, I see the parallel today.
Yeah.
I can't vote for Donald Trump because he has such a sordid past. He's had mistresses. And so I can't vote for Harris because she's the mistress. So we got two imperfect people. Yeah. But you have to ask yourself, which is more likely to prevent evil and promote good and use our vote wisely?
Bob Russell, this has been a great program. The time just flew by. I appreciate all that you've done for the church, for your voice, for encouraging pastors, especially to engage this election, to disciple their congregations and to speak to the issues. Appreciate your friendship.
Well, thanks, Richard. You and the Policy Center have been a great help in Kentucky, and just keep up doing what you're doing.
Thank you. May God bless you. And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to vote. Tuesday, November the 5th is Election Day. Early voting begins on October the 31st.